Hey everybody, it's Adam, live and in person for you. Hey everybody, it's Adam, wonder who he'll interview.
Hey everyone, it's Call Me Adam, and on today's episode of Burying It All with Call Me Adam, we are chatting with alt-pop recording artist Rachel Sage. We are going to be talking with Rachel on a wide range of topics, from her new album Character, to her cancer diagnosis, to her hobbies. So don't go anywhere. Hi, Rachel.
Hello. How are you?
Good. It's so great to have you on the show.
It's fabulous to be here.
Thank you. The last time we spoke was around 2012-ish.
Wow.
Yes. You were performing, and I don't even know if the room still exists, at the Pink Elephant.
I don't know if it exists either, but I love that name so much. I sure hope it does.
Yeah, I hope it does too. So I'm thrilled that we are finally getting a chance to reconnect and catch up because there's so much happening with you that I'm excited to dive into.
Excellent. I'm sure there's so much happening with all of us, isn't there?
Yes, yes, there is. Yes, we are living in quite some crazy times right now.
Extraordinary times, yes.
Yes, definitely. Let's start with your album release. Now, it's been released here in the U.S., but it's about to be released in the U.K. in July.
That's right. Yes.
And the album is called Character. Mm-hmm. So the album is, it was written during cancer.
Recovery.
Yeah, your recovery
what you're
from cancer,
for.
Yes.
I'm here to help.
Yes, thank you. I could use all the help I can get.
That's
some
okay.
days.
Okay, can't we all? You can help me too.
Yes. So what was it like to write this album as you're recovering from cancer, and like how did you find the strength to write during this time?
Mm-hmm. Well, excellent question. Yes.
Thank you.
So I don't think that I could have written this album during my treatment. You really had to wait until I was mostly on the other side of it and I could feel that my energy was coming back. And I hadn't really played music for just about 9 months from my diagnosis through my treatment. And so as you can imagine, a type A creative like me, as soon as I actually did have the strength physically, the mental strength was pretty easy to find after that. I think in that particular moment, I was just so, so grateful to not only be okay and to be in remission, but to have the opportunity to get together again with my amazing bandmates and my co-producer and to just get back to doing what I adore. So that part was easy. You know, getting through the treatment was rough, and then once I was okay, the music just flowed.
That's incredible. I've been since I'm here in the US, I've been listening to the album on Spotify and I
nice.
Love it.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. I mean, your voice is so strong. The songs are very relatable. I love the introspective lyrics that you wrote for a lot of the songs.
The only kind I know how to write.
Yes, yes. Well, they're relatable to everybody.
Oh, good.
So
good.
How did the songwriting help lift your spirits during this time?
Great question. Well, you know, again, I think music itself was what lifted my spirits. And, you know, as soon as I was able to just get back physically to playing the piano and vocalizing, I started doing that. And I didn't necessarily do that with new material. I started playing my old material, and my wonderful violinist, Kelly Halloran, who's been touring and, you know, supporting me for many years in the UK as well as the US, she started coming over to my place in the city, downtown in the village, and we just started jamming and playing improvisations and whatever came to mind that day. So it was very low pressure, and it was just about dipping my toe back in. And then before too long, you know, one song started coming out after another. And I think, you know, generally the themes that sprang to mind initially really evolved out of gratitude. The first song that I wrote for the album, Bravery is on Fire, was about gratitude, just to have the strength finally to decide to share my diagnosis with my wider listenership. and my fan base, which had been something I hadn't rushed into. I really waited until I knew I was ready and I had gotten through it myself, because I wasn't looking, of course, for any sympathy. I just wanted to be honest and authentic and also share that positive message of prevention being the best cure for gynecological cancer specifically. So I wanted all the ladies out there to go get themselves checked if they hadn't already. So that became very important to me to write about and to sing about.
Well, I'm glad you do, because it is an important topic to discuss and to make sure that your listeners are aware of, because it is a very serious it's a very serious cancer diagnosis that a lot of women face. And
yes, I had no idea how many. I mean, when I first learned that statistic from my oncologist, I think it was 60,000 women a year in the United States and something like 300,000 worldwide. Mm-hmm. I was shocked, because the specific type of cancer that I had, endometrial, I had never even heard of it. I didn't know what my endometrium was, and we're not going to get into medical stuff, obviously, now. But, you know, it is good to understand these things and and to be able to prevent them by catching them early. So, you know, as soon as I got through the other side of it, I just wanted to sing about the joy of being able to continue to live and do what I love and appreciate everyone around me who had supported me, and hopefully give back in that way to others.
Well, we're glad that you are giving back and you are back to singing and music. And I know you have your guitar with you.
I do.
So would you like to give us a little sample of one of your favorite songs on the album?
Why don't I do a little bit of Blue Sky Days?
Okay,
I don't
would
even have
that.
To do the whole thing. I could just give you a snippet.
Okay.
So we were talking about gratitude. I like being one of those people who talks while they intro. When I was little and I used to see people doing that, I was like, how do they do that at the same time? It's like patting your head and rubbing your stomach, right?
Exactly.
And now I'm one of them.
Yeah.
Blue sky days, white oceans open embrace, gold sun rays, red moonlights, God-giving grace, but I don't know where I'm going, I can't see straight. Lying upon the pavement is a moving snake. Feel hope in the dark, reaching out. Recklessness and anger's rushing out my mouth. Oh, whoa. Gratitude. How could I forget you? That's all you get.
I love it. I love it.
Don't want to give you too much of a good thing.
No, exactly. It will, because we want everybody to stream the album and download it and buy it. So that is a brief sampling of what you can get on Rachel's new album, Character. And it drops in the UK in July.
That's right, July 24th.
Yes. So we're very excited for it.
Thank you.
Why don't we take a quick little break? And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about your cancer diagnosis, because I do really want to help women out there learn about this this type of cancer.
Sounds good.
So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with Rachel Sage.
Oh, wait. You don't know? You haven't heard? You must not be subscribed to the Call Me Adam Digest. When you sign up for the Call Me Adam Digest, you are the first to know. You get a front row seat to my interviews and podcast episodes, where you get to discover new things about your favorite celebrities. You get personal stories from the other side of the microphone that you wouldn't know by just reading, watching, or listening to my interviews. We get to have a weekly connection, and you can add some fun to your weekend. So come take a peek behind the curtain with the Call Me Adam Digest. Sign up today at callmeadam.com. Can't wait to see you there.
Hey everyone, my name is Rachel Sage and you're listening to Bearing It All with Call Me Adam.
And now we're back. So before our break, you gave us a little sneak peek of your album Character, which, like we said, you wrote during your recovery from cancer. Now, you were diagnosed with endometrial cancer, which is uterine cancer.
That's right.
And a lot of women do suffer from that. Maybe you could just take my listeners through a little bit about your journey, maybe some of the symptoms that you experienced that made you go something's wrong, I need to go get it checked out.
Well, you know, to be very, very frank, I did not have symptoms, which is what presses home the point even more how important it is to get regular annual checkups. Because if you're not getting your lady parts checked, if you're not going for that regular gynecological exam, then you may not catch this, you know, in the early stage. And I was very, very fortunate that I received, you know, innumerable reminders from my insurance to go get that exam. And of course, I ignored it a little too long, and I would keep pinning the notices, you know, with a magnet on my fridge. And when I would come home from tour, I would look at it and sort of see it and then ignore it again. And I did this 3 or 4 times, and a couple of years went by and I didn't have, you know, that exam. And the reality is, you know, I have no regrets, because that's not a way to live. You don't learn and grow that way. But I want you ladies out there to not do what I did, and to go every year, because had I gone, they probably would have caught it in stage 0, 1, or 2 instead of, you know, a more advanced cancer, which is what I had. And then, you know, you can avoid things like having to have chemotherapy or extensive surgery, most likely. Not always, but there's a possibility that you can. So I'm very, very grateful to Planned Parenthood, who actually caught the irregularity in my pap test when I finally hauled myself in. Just, you know, I was thinking I was being so good. You know, I was like, I'm finally going to go. Like, nothing's wrong. Everything's fine. I have no issues. I'm so proud of myself. And then, of course, I was quite shocked when the test came back and said, you know, we don't know what this is, but there's something off. And then at that point, I went to an actual, you know, specialist, and they found it almost immediately in that next exam.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was a whirlwind, and it was really scary, and I don't like to sugarcoat it, because I wouldn't wish it on anybody, but I also, you know how fortunate I was to have loving and supportive family around me, and while I didn't even always agree with them on what the best course of treatment would be, and I struggled with that, because I am a very holistically minded, you know, nutritionally centric vegan, you know, there were so many things I didn't want to put in my body. I didn't want to put toxic medicines in my body. But when, you know, I went to several specialists, and when they were all really saying the same thing as far as the right course of treatment for me at the advanced stage I was at, I decided to heed that advice, and I just committed 100% to being the best, strongest patient I could possibly be. And what that meant for me was not only pursuing these more traditional Western medical approaches, such as chemo and radiation, I had the triptych. I had all of them. So, you know, it sucked, but I also saw people around me who were having much worse treatments, and who were in much worse shape than me. And I, you know, I just had so much empathy for them. It made me realize, you know, I was going to be just fine. I was getting the care that I needed. I had the love and support that helped me. And perhaps most importantly, I had a lot of insight already as far as how to eat to heal myself. I was already, you know, drinking green juice every day, and eating blueberries, and taking vitamin D, and, you know, all of these other things that really do bolster the immune system. So I think these two things go hand in hand. And if you're getting good care, hopefully they're reminding you of that. And if you're you know, if you're not and you're needing to fill in those blanks yourself, there's so much information abundantly just by Googling about, you know, good diets for cancer and also for cancer prevention.
That's wonderful. It's good that you were doing it. It's good that you are doing it now.
Yes, now, how long have you continue to eat that way, by the way, even under lockdown. I'm ordering my you know, omegas and my flaxseed and all that stuff. Well, Thank goodness for Amazon Prime.
Yes, exactly. Well, I think it's wonderful that you're able to continue it during this lockdown time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's probably very easy to just slip back. But when you,
I've had my moments of wanting to, you know, dip back into the red wine and et cetera. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's such a small sacrifice to make. And, you know, that whole let food be thy medicine thing, it really is true. And at this point, you know, that's the area that I can have personally the most control over. So being a control freak, I can do that.
Yes. Now, how long have you been in remission for?
Excellent question. It sort of depends how I think about it. I had my first test December of 2018 just to sort of assess how the treatment had worked. And that's kind of what they call a baseline test.
Okay.
And my last chemo had been actually on Yom Kippur on September 18th, which was, you know, they actually said, are you sure you want to do this on your high holiday? And I was like, I just want to get this over with. Yeah. I'm sure God will understand.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's good to be able to look back and remember that I had a little extra spiritualism on my side.
Yes.
But yeah, so... Yeah. I guess, you know, that was my first test. And then I think they consider the next one really your first clean scan.
Mm-hmm.
That was June of 2019. So really a year.
Wow. That's true. And how do you feel? And today you feel, I mean, as good as you, you know, as good as you know how.
I feel okay. You know, there are certain things that will always be a little different. As like anyone who's gone through a major surgery, I had major abdominal surgery and, you know, that is what it is. Anybody can look that up and see what that means. But for me personally, it just means that I try now to do more yoga. Mm-hmm. I try to get more physical exercise. The whole sort of retro approach to taking it easy and, you know, more bed rest and all of that, even during treatment, has been very much debunked. And I think the more active and the more flexible you can be, the more, you know, connected to your physicality, the better you will do in treatment and in recovery.
That's great. Have you, I mean, you have your music as a platform to raise awareness. Have you thought about trying to reach out to any organizations to become like a spokesperson or?
I actually already am. So thank you for that seamless segue.
You're welcome.
One of the songs on the album is called Bravery's on Fire. And I did mention it before. It came out last fall as a single ahead of the album, and 100% of all of the proceeds benefit the two hospitals where I was personally treated. And they are on the forefront of gynecological cancer research and women's cancer research in general. So those are Massachusetts General Hospital and Memorial Sloan Kettering Hospital. So I continue to perform that song and to try to spread the word about it. And it's also on the album.
That's wonderful.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Have you had any fans reach out to you with their own stories?
I have, yeah, a handful of them.
What's that like to hear from fans?
Oh, it's so moving. I mean, you know, to be honest, that's pretty much the reason I decided to share my story. I had kind of kept it to myself other than my close friends and family because it just felt like I needed to get through it and it wasn't something I necessarily wanted to just get into. You know, the more you tell people, you have to be ready for them to ask you a lot of questions. You have to have the mental strength and the physical energy to field all of that. So I wasn't ready to do it until I was ready, which was, you know, a good 9 months after I had been diagnosed. So once I did, it was sort of an even combination of people letting me know they had been through the same thing or something similar. And then a handful of people who had told me they knew loved ones who had been through it or their mothers had been through it. So, you know, across the board, it really just made it seem worthwhile that I had shared, because every single time someone told me, I could tell that they felt they hadn't been able to speak about it with other people, that it was taboo, or just to talk about, you know, those parts of our body. Like, it's difficult, not only for women, but for men, for everyone. And, you know, it shouldn't be. I think it's silly. If we talked about it more, we would be able to, you know, take more preventive measures, I think.
Yes. I mean, that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk about it during the interview, because I felt like it's a platform that could help reach a lot of people and make them more aware and maybe, you know, save someone.
You know, the actress Fran Drescher, right?
Yes.
From The Nanny.
Of course.
She's fabulous. And as we diehards know, she was also in, like, Staying Alive, right, as a dancer. She sings. She writes books. She was the first celebrity who I knew of who had gone through it. And I read her book, Cancer Schmancer, which is also sparked her organization of the same name. And then I continually went to her website to learn more about how to, for instance, detoxify your home of harsh chemicals and things that were carcinogenic. And these are things that anyone should know, you know, just preventively, or if you have children, or if you just want to be healthy. So I think the overlap between someone who's actually going through it or has gone through it and people who just want to lead a healthy lifestyle is significant. So I wish someone had informed me, you know, 10 years ago.
Yes, yes. Well, now you have the opportunity to inform so many people, which is wonderful. Did you get to talk to Fran? Did you reach out to her at any point?
If you know her, feel free to connect us.
I will. I don't know her yet, but if I can get her on my podcast, I will be sure to connect you.
It's funny. When I used to do Edinburgh Fringe Fest years ago, and I did a lot of my, you know, I did some wacky characters, and they talked like this, and, you know, also some of my relatives, so back in the old countries, they spoke like this. And a lot of people over there would say, oh my goodness, you remind me a lot of The Nanny, you know. And I guess it was like their only touchstone of a, you know, sort of eccentric Jewish-y lady or whatever. So I appreciate it, because I've always thought she was fabulous. So.
Yes, yes, she is. She is.
And she's also a very, very powerful survivor and someone who obviously has a very big heart.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you for being so open about your journey with cancer. I know it's going to help a lot of people.
Woohoo!
So let's take another quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk about some of your hobbies, because in preparing for this interview, there were a lot of things on your Instagram that I saw that I was like, oh my god, this is so fascinating.
Cool.
Don't go anywhere. We're going to be right back, more with Rachel Sage.
Do you remember watching your favorite celebrity being interviewed, but you could tell there was more to that interview than what was being shown? My name is Adam Rothenberg, and in the past 16 years, I have interviewed over 2,200 artists and celebrities. And I am here to tell you that yes, there is definitely more to the interviews you have watched, read, or listened to. In my debut book, Behind the Curtain, The Mistakes, Lessons Learned, and Triumphs of Interviewing Celebrities, I take you behind the scenes of what really happens during an interview, sharing the joys, the pitfalls, and the OMG moments. You can get your copy on Amazon or through my entertainment platform, callmeadam.com. You can get your very own autographed copy.
And now we're back. So the first thing I need to talk about is, as I was scrolling through your Instagram, one thing I saw is you like to restore furniture.
I do. I love it.
So how did you get into that? What are some things you've restored?
Sure. I do indeed have a furniture restoring fetish, and I like to put it that way. It sounds a little racier, right?
Yes.
We can take what we can get while we're under lockdown.
Exactly, exactly.
You know, I think I just like to rescue and, what do they say? Upcycle. So I don't actually build furniture, but I do give it my own treatment. And what that means is I love to paint it and glitterize it and decoupage and collage. And so almost all of the furniture in my apartment has received this special attention. And almost none of it was purchased. So, you know, especially in New York City, people leave really beautiful, you know, gently or not so gently used furniture on the street. And it's usually there for no less than 10 minutes before someone takes it.
Yes.
And, you know, these are not things I tended to want to tell my mom, who was so germphobic even before all of this pandemic stuff. She was very much armed for this crisis that we're in, but to her credit. But I wasn't. I was one of those people who was like, I'll Lysol it, I'll wipe it down, it's fine. Who knows where it's been? But, you know, by the time I shellac it and paint it and throw, you know, 6 pounds of glitter on it, it'll be fine. So that was really, you know, how I decorated my very first apartment in the East Village, and then the one that I reside in now. I'm not there right now because I'm out of the city during these times, but I can't wait to get back and gently caress my beloved furniture pieces.
I love it. What's your favorite piece that you found that you refurbished?
Sure. Well, there was a publicist who moved out of the building where my record label Empress Records has an office, and my label manager JoJo, she texted me and she was like, Marnie is moving out. She has two little end tables I know you could do your magic to. Do you want them? Should I save them? You know, so she pulled them from, you know, potential demise and kept them for me. And then at my next opportunity, I painted one of them bright yellow and put gold glitter all over it and decoupaged it with all kinds of imagery like eyes and lips and, you know, all kinds of words that I like to use too. And then the other one is bright blue in a similar design theme. Mm-hmm. And these are my two end tables next to my bedroom. So, you know, it's good fun. I don't know. It calms me down. I like to give new life to these used objects that otherwise would just be plain and a little blah. So I think it's a metaphor for many things.
Yes, yes. Well, I love that you do this. I hope you post more pictures of your furniture because I'd love to see more of it.
I'd like to decorate guitars too. And a lot of people give me their junk guitars, you know, the ones that like don't really play well or the action's all messed up. And I will do the same treatment to them too and restring them. And I played one of them in my video for Alive so people can see that.
Oh, well, I'll definitely link that to the text of the interview so people can check it out. Yeah. Now, the other hobby I know you have is you love to paint.
Oh, my goodness. I sure do.
Because you've put some of your artwork on Instagram.
Yes.
Now, you seem to...
And some of it is also in my new album, In Character.
Oh.
There are some pop-out and cut-out wearable art masks inside, and I hand-drew them, and I painted them and scanned them and, you know, made them part of the design. So... all of these things intersect. Ooh. For me, it's all just expression.
What are some other hobbies you have that maybe people don't know about?
Do I need more?
No, you don't need more.
I'm teasing you, Matt. Let me think for a second. I mean, I think art, you know, art, music, writing poetry, I don't necessarily look at any of them as hobbies per se, because for me, I really went down this path of being a professional artist, you know, full force from a very young age. And even when I was pursuing acting, as I did for a while, that was my major in college. I was a theater major, and I did a lot of acting in high school, and I did ballet in my teens. You know, I kind of looked at all of it not as hobbies, but just as, you know, committed relationships to various art forms. And, you know, I knew that whatever I put in was what they would give back to me. And it was really the truth. And when I started to kind of recede from one and give more attention to another, that balance would be self-evident. So I don't dance as much as I used to, but when I do dance, it reminds me how much I enjoy it.
What were some shows that you were in college? What were some of the plays or musicals?
I wasn't a musical theater person at all.
Okay.
So I was more of a, you know, pardon the pun, but a straight actor. You know, I did a lot of Shakespeare and Chekhov and a lot of classical theater, Ibsen, and then the odd avant-garde performance art piece. You know, I was in a group called the Women's Performance Collective, and we wrote our own material about positive body imagery and feminism, and we would use, you know, Ani DiFranco songs and Suzanne Vega songs, and it was sort of my introduction to the women's music movement in a certain way, because it was bridging theater with folk and feminist music. So that's those impressionable great 20s, you know.
Yes. I was speaking of other female singers, you know, in listening to your album Character, I kept thinking a lot of your songwriting is very similar, I find, to Lisa Loeb, and you sound... It's a similar
Let me see if I can sound. Find it. You say, I only hear what I want to, I don't listen hard, don't... I don't really know the song, so...
But that's
I like to imitate like 3 seconds of it, because I've done that in karaoke.
I think
she's wonderful.
Yes.
Thank you. I take that as
You're
a
welcome.
Nice compliment.
You're welcome.
And it's not just because I wear glasses, right?
No, not at all. Okay. This was before I even saw the glasses.
Nice.
Yes, this was just in listening to the album, so...
I know her, and she is a lovely person, and very open and warm and, you know, very generous with her listeners. So I take that very kindly. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. I got to interview her a few years ago. We did a phone interview, and she was
great.
She was just the nicest to
Isn't
talk
she?
To.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I ran into her, I think it was last year at the NAMM convention, which is a musical equipment conference in California. And she just, you know, she had like so many guitar sponsorships, I couldn't keep up. I'm like, so who are you here working with? And there were like 7 of them, you know, so she's pretty fabulous. And I always appreciate that she still loves to wear Hello Kitty, because I do too.
Aww.
And people tease me about it. And I'm like, well, hello, you know, Hello Kitty is just a classic. Why would I give her up just because I've grown up?
Exactly. Have you written any songs for Hello Kitty or about cats?
I could write one right now. I have a song called Maybe She'll Have Cats that's on my previous album, Myopia. And I wrote it a long time ago, and then it ended up on the last record, which if you don't have, we're happy to send to you.
I was actually listening to it on Spotify earlier.
Okay. Yeah, so you can check out Maybe She'll Have Cats. And it's actually sort of a play on, you know, the cliche of a woman who is single, getting older, and everybody sort of putting this ridiculous pressure on her to find a husband or to just partner up somehow, and that it's not okay to just, you know, be alone in this world and to have one's primary relationship be with oneself. So I just took that and ran with it in a playful way, and with the image of, you know, someone, not necessarily me, but someone getting their last laugh, you know, as a cat lady, perfectly happy.
I love it. I'm having so much fun with you. You're so nice and so great to talk
you
to.
You too, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you. So I do have some rapid fire questions for you.
Sure.
So I would like to know first, peanut butter, crunchy or smooth?
Crunchy.
And your favorite brand?
God, I'm such a loser. I'm just going to say like whatever's organic. I don't even know what brand.
Okay. Organic crunchy.
There you
go. That's what you like, yes.
I'm not a brand person with peanut butter, I guess.
Okay,
oh well.
That's okay.
Okay, keep them coming. Rapid fire.
Okay, yeah. Favorite M&M flavor?
I don't eat any candy at all.
No candy, okay.
No candy. I used to. Wow. Oh, but when I used to, I would say just red because it's my favorite color.
Oh, I love that. Your favorite go-to emoji when texting?
A heart.
Yes, love it.
Big red heart.
And which
heart.
Red heart? I was going to say, which color heart?
Red, definitely.
Red, yeah. How do you take your coffee?
I don't drink coffee, but I do love chai.
Mm.
And I like to put almond milk or, you know, oat milk or something in it.
Oh, I love that.
I'm a hippie. Are you gathering that?
Yes. No, I see that.
I also spent quite a bit of time in California. I lived in Northern California, so that explains a lot of these answers, too.
Oh. favorite scent and smell? Or smell, scent or smell.
I love tangerine or orange.
Mm. I love that.
My second would probably be vanilla.
Mm. Oh, I love vanilla.
Basically dessert.
Yeah. I love it. Those are actually all my rapid fire questions.
Well done, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. Aww. And then I always end my interviews playing off of the title of my podcast, Bearing It All. So if you were to bear it all and reveal something about yourself that you have not talked about previously, what would you share with me today?
Wow. Well, I would say something that many people don't know, which is that my very first tour with Ani DiFranco, it was my first tour ever, and she said on stage in front of about 5,000 people that the reason she had picked me, at least initially, the reason she opened my press kit package was because I had candy with my name on it. I had branded candy. And here, there I was thinking she just liked my music. And in front of, you know, thousands of people at the Ryman Auditorium or wherever she was like, and here's Rachel Sage, and I picked her because I love her candy. And I was like, wow. So you just never know why someone will give you an opportunity and open a door for you.
Exactly.
And the irony is that I no longer eat sugar at all. I'm like a sugar-free gal. But back in the day, I guess it served me well, didn't it?
Yes. I mean, to go on tour with Ani DiFranco is amazing. And as your first tour.
Yeah.
What's something that you learned from her during that time?
So much. I think the biggest lesson I learned from Ani is just to have as much integrity as you can, and that, you know, if it doesn't feel right in your gut, just don't do it. You know, saying no is one of the most powerful resources we have.
Yes, that is very true. Well, that's the whole interview.
Fantastic. Oh, how sad that we have to leave one another.
I know.
I have a live stream later on, so I do actually have something else to do. Otherwise, we could just hang out and, you know, maybe we could craft together another time.
I don't think you want me crafting with you.
No?
I
am. Okay. No, you're not good with a hot glue gun?
I'm not. No.
Okay.
I'm good
you.
At burning myself with a
oh,
hot glue
my
gun.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not that kind of show, though. We're not going to go there.
No.
There may be children watching.
Yes. I was never that artistically inclined like that. It didn't run in my family. And
you know what? You do enough.
Yes. Oh,
you just
I'm good
keep,
at this.
You keep doing you.
Thank you.
Because you're excellent at it.
Thank you. And where can people find you on social media?
Yes. I'm going to give myself a little accompaniment.
I love it.
You can find me at rachelsange.com. And that's not the way you normally spell it. It's a little quirky. RACHAEL.com. And you can also find me on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. And if there's somewhere else you think I ought to be, definitely let me know.
That was beautiful.
Thank you so much. Beautiful. I do my best.
Well, everybody listening, especially if you are in the UK, on July 24th, download Rachel's new album, Character. If you're here in the US, stream it on Spotify, iTunes. You have hard copies of the album on your website.
I do. I even have a special deluxe version that I designed myself with a pop-out mask, a Venetian mask that I drew. And it has elastic and everything. You can wear it. It's pretty exciting.
That is perfect, especially for right now during the pandemic. So everybody go to Rachel's website and get the deluxe version. Keep listening, and thank you for tuning in.
Yay!
He'll get the dirt and the scoop and the story, for he happens to be in the know. Just ask anybody who's had him. Adam lives for the business of show. Call me Adam.com.
find more episodes of Burying It All with Call Me Adam everywhere podcasts are streamed, including iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio. Follow me on social media, Facebook, Instagram, at CallMeAdamNYC. For my print and video interviews, visit my website, callmeadam.com.